स्व तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। ॐ मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग हु ड्वेल्स इन द हार्ट्स ऑफ ऑल। ही इज द सोर्स and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamuni or the crest jewel of discrimination by the great seer philosopher Shankara. Here he is giving us now how to discriminate between the Atman, the true self, and the non-self. So first he points out that these are sheaths, physical sheath, mental sheath, and causal sheath. And these are different sheaths of the Atman. And the sheaths are not the Atman, but they are separate from the Atman. But through ignorance, Atman has become identified with these sheaths. Then he points out, the mental organ identifies itself with the organs of perception and action as well as with the physical body. Thus the sense of individuality arises, which causes a man to live and to act. His consciousness is a reflection of the infinite consciousness of the Atman. Now this is a very important teaching here. You see, first, there is the ignorance, of course. And through that ignorance, what happens? It is the mind that identifies itself with the senses and organs of action and organs of knowledge, and also with the physical body. And thus identifying itself, there arises the sense of ego. I am an individual being. This consciousness arises through the identification of the mind with, not the identification of the mind, it's the mind that causes that identification with the senses and sense organs and the physical body. And so mind, in a sense, is the cause of bondage, and mind is the cause of freedom. You see, mind is in the center, as it were. Atman is there, and this mental sheath, this mental organ, this mind, connects the Atman with the center. Connects the Atman in what way? Atman is not changing. Atman really is not identifying itself, but it is the consciousness of the Atman reflecting upon the mind, causing this identification, and there arises sense of ego. Now, of course, you see, you can't jump out of ourselves. The ego is there. That identification is there. That identification goes away only when we have gone, when we have transcended the senses, when we have transcended the physical consciousness, then only this ego goes away. In other words, with the vision of God, the ego goes away in this sense, that, you know, the ego goes away in the highest consciousness, in the highest transcendental consciousness, not in the lower experiences. But the ego is no longer an unripe ego, no longer the ego that separates us from God and from the universe. You see, take for instance this individual idea. I am an individual being. This separates us from God and separates us from one another, from this universe. I am separate from you, you are different from me. And as such, all kinds of troubles arise. And what causes all these troubles? It's the mind. Generally, in the West, in Western psychology, consciousness is said to be the property of the mind. But according to the Eastern psychology, consciousness is identical with Atman, with the Self. See, Western psychology does not recognize anything higher or greater than the mind. And so the consciousness or intelligence belongs to the mind. But according to the Hindu psychology, consciousness is Atman. God alone is pure consciousness. Atman alone is pure consciousness. And upon the mind, this consciousness is reflecting. And through that reflection, the mind thinks he's intelligent, mind is intelligent, and mind is active, and mind is identifying itself with the sheaths. And that's how we act and live. Without that sense of ego in us, in our ordinary consciousness, we couldn't act and live. Now again, you see, this ego is to be surrendered to the Atman, to God. Now, here again, let me point out, you see, this idea of the Atman and to love the Atman, to meditate on the Atman, you see, these are mere words. Very difficult to do it. But the most practical thing is to have this Atman again identified with a holy personality. You see, this is a practical thing to do. Now, why should we identify Atman with Christ or Krishna or Buddha or Ramakrishna? They are separate, different beings. Alright, they may be divine incarnations. But they are not the Atman. You see, this is the doubt that arises in the mind. Swamiji explained this in a very beautiful way. He said, the Atman cannot know itself by itself. The eyes cannot see themselves without a mirror. In the Upanishads also we find, it says, Vijñātāraṁ are kena vijāniya. Who can know the knower? The Atman is the knower. Who can know that Atman? Now, it's a dilemma. Now, how can we get rid of that dilemma? Swamiji says that you have to see the Atman in a reflection of the Atman, in a mirror, where it can be best reflected. The eyes, you can see the eyes on a mirror, reflected. How can the Atman, the Spirit, God, within us, can be reflected in a mirror? Where is that kind of mirror? Then he points out, first we try to reflect ourselves everywhere. You see, I want to possess this, I want to obtain that. That's trying to reflect ourselves, to identify ourselves. But those are all finite. Now, a knower of Brahman, you see, apart from the idea that Christ or Ramakrishna or Krishna were divine incarnations, give up that idea. Even then, a knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. You see, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of God, is not like I know this object. It is beyond the idea of subject and object, where subject and object have become one. That unity, unitary consciousness, that is the knowledge of God. And whoever has attained to this knowledge of Brahman is one with Brahman. And he is the best mirror upon which the Atman can be reflected. And so, we are taught that if you take the ideal of a personal God, and which is the most practical thing to do, consider him as your Atman, dwelling within. There's a beautiful passage in the Upanishads. The Self, or the Atman, in all beings, and all beings in the Self. He is minuter than the minutest, is vaster than the vastest, greater than the greatest. In other words, no time and space. See, when we say inside, we have to think of him inside, because that's the nearmost existence in our consciousness. And so you are taught to meditate, to think of God, whatever your ideal, chosen ideal may be, as within yourself. And that is the Atman you are meditating upon, not separate from the Atman. Now let us see. The mental organ identifies itself with the organs of perception and of action, as well as with the physical body. Thus the sense of individuality arises, which causes a man to live and to act. His consciousness is a reflection of the infinite consciousness of the Atman. He who believes himself to be acting or experiencing is known as the ego, the individual man. Identifying himself with the gunas, he experiences the three states of consciousness, waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. Thus all these experiences in the three states are due to the ego identifying with the sheaths. When the objects of experience are pleasant, he is happy. When they are unpleasant, he is unhappy. Pleasure and pain are characteristics of the individual, not of the Atman, which is forever blissful. So you see, all our experiences of happiness and misery are the experiences of the ego. And just consider again that this ego has no reality. It's a shadow. It's a mysterious thing, you know, how this happens. Nobody can explain. The ego itself has no reality. And yet our whole world we center upon that ego. We are happy or unhappy, we are miserable or blissful, with that sense of ego. But the Atman, the real nature in us, is blissful. God is neither happy nor unhappy. God is blissful, blissful consciousness. And that is your Atman. I'm just trying to tell you how to get out of that also. The object of experience is lovable, not for itself, but because it serves the Atman. But the Atman itself is to be loved above all else. The Atman is forever blissful, for it there can never be any suffering. Now, you see, how can we love that Atman? It seems to us an abstract thing. Yes, Satchit Ananda. Absolute existence, absolute knowledge, absolute bliss. But these are mere words. But when you consider that Atman as God, as Christ, as Ramakrishna, as Buddha or Krishna, or an illumined soul even, the Guru, you see, you can love. And you can, you see, as long as there is the ego, as long as we are meditating, as long as we are thinking, there is a separation. And so with the help of this ego, we have to transcend the ego by surrendering ourselves at the feet of the Atman in the form of a Christ or Krishna or a Ramakrishna. Take refuge in him. And this is pointed out also in the Upanishads, where that idea of divine incarnation was not yet evolved. But it points out, Brahmavid, Brahmaiva Bhavati, Anvara Brahman becomes Brahman. By he who meditates upon the Nuara Brahman is meditating upon Brahman. In dreamless sleep, when there is no object of experience, the joy of the Atman is felt. This is confirmed by our own experience as well as by the scriptures, tradition and logic. Of course, this has caused much misunderstanding in the minds of people. You see, in the Upanishads also you find how when we are in dreamless sleep, we are nearer to the Atman. You see, we got rid of all other seeds of ignorance. We have no physical consciousness. Even the mind is absent there. And that is the point where the Hindu psychologists point out that the consciousness is not the property of the mind. Because if it were the property of the mind, mind will always be conscious. But mind becomes unconscious. And in deep sleep, mind is unconscious. And so there is only the causal sheath. What is that causal sheath? That sense of ego is still there. And it is said to be blissful experience in deep sleep. But of course, that blissful experience we are not conscious of. The difference between sleep and samadhi is this. In sleep, you are unconscious, you are nearer to the Atman, you are nearer to God. But you are not conscious, you are not aware of it. In samadhi, you become conscious of it. Awareingly, you are there with him. That is the difference. Of course, Swami Vivekananda pointed out, a fool goes to sleep and he still wakes up. When he wakes up, he is still a fool. But a fool goes into samadhi, he wakes up and he is a knower of God. There is that difference. But this creates misunderstanding. You know, there is one Austrian, Kostler, he wrote a book saying that the Hindus accept deep sleep as vision of God. And he quotes the Upanishads, a passage, which shows that one goes into blissful state. But he purposely avoided quoting the next verse which describes the difference between sleep and samadhi. You see? Now we come to another chapter which describes what this maya or ignorance is. It's quite deeply philosophical. Maya, in our potential aspect, is the divine power of the Lord. She has no beginning. She is composed of the three gunas, subtle, beyond perception. It is from the effects she produces that her existence is inferred by the wise. It is she who gives birth to the whole universe. Now, of course, what we call maya here is the same as the Sankhya philosophers call prakriti. And this prakriti is composed of the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. When they are in perfect balance, there is no creation. When the balance is disturbed, there is this creation of the universe. And the substance of this universe, of mind and matter, the substances are those three gunas. We cannot define these gunas, nor can we define this maya or prakriti, but only by their effects we know. For instance, when there is in the mind there is a calmness, we say sattva is predominant. When the mind is full of passion, rajas is predominant. When the mind is full of laziness, tamas is predominant. So by their effects we know the existence, their existence. But it is one with the Lord, it is the power of the Lord. This Ramakrishna always emphasized. Just as fire and its power to burn is one and the same thing. Similarly, this Brahman and this power which creates, preserves and dissolves the universe, one and the same. In other words, you see, they try to make distinction between the impersonal and personal. The impersonal you consider as when you go beyond Maya in your consciousness. And the personal is when Maya is together with Brahman. What is a personal God? God who creates, preserves and dissolves this universe. What is an impersonal Brahman? Who is beyond all attributes, who is indescribable. There is no creation there. This universe disappears. But still, the power, Shakti, in Tantra it is called Shakti. In Sankhya philosophy it is called Prakriti. In Vedanta it is called Maya. So they are always united with Brahman. When there is a movement, then we call that personal being, creator. And this Maya has no beginning. This Maya in another aspect, you see, is the ignorance. It has two aspects, one universal and another individual. In this universal aspect, it's always united with Brahman and is beginningless and endless. In its individual aspect, that is the Maya that has possessed you, has possessed me, and possessed every being, has no beginning, but has an end. In other words, the ignorance that covers us is a universal ignorance, but as it covers us, it becomes individual in what sense? This physical body, the mind, the senses, they are individualistic, they are separate. They are parts, not separate, parts of the universal Maya. And I am identifying myself with these parts. And so this is the individual ignorance. Then it is called avidya, two terms, Maya, universal, avidya, individual. And this avidya is beginningless time. So the question that is often raised, when did this begin? How did we become ignorant? You see, according to what we will read in the Bible, for instance, Adam was originally divine and pure. But ignorance entered into him. He ate the fruits of the tree of knowledge. And thus he got into the relative universe of good and bad. But you see, if you take that position philosophically, you are in trouble. Logically, you are in trouble. Because if Adam was pure to begin with, and then there was the fall of Adam, and say through some grace, Adam becomes pure again and becomes divine, there is the possibility of his fall again. So what good? So this creation also has no beginning, and in a universal sense it has no end. In the individual it has no beginning, but it has an end. Now again the question may be raised, and you will find it answered somewhere in this book. The question may be asked, But that which is beginningless also must be endless logically. And that is very true. That which is beginningless is supposed to be endless. But here again the answer is this, that this ignorance is not something positive. The individual ignorance that we have is not something positive. It is a negative something, that is lack of knowledge. Ignorance is not a substance, not an object, but it's a negation of knowledge. And as such, the negation of knowledge may be beginningless, but this negation goes away. Then, of course, he gives an illustration. Suppose this object the lack of this object was beginningless. This did not exist from a beginningless time, but suddenly it came into existence. So that which was beginningless comes to an end. If it had been something positive, something real, then there would have been no end to it. But because it is beginning, it is something negative, lack of knowledge is ignorance. So when knowledge arises, ignorance vanishes. Darkness is lack of light. When the light comes, darkness vanishes. So here again, Maya he describes. She is neither being nor non-being, non-being, nor a mixture of both. So it's something very mysterious. She is neither divided nor undivided, nor a mixture of both. She is neither an indivisible whole nor composed of parts, nor a mixture of both. She is most strange. Her nature is inexplicable. Just as knowing a rope to be a rope destroys the illusion that it is a snake. So here again he identifies this ignorance to illusion in the individual case. Just as knowing a rope to be a rope destroys the illusion that it is a snake, so Maya is destroyed by direct experience of Brahman, the pure, the free, the one without a second. Maya is composed of the gunas, the forces which are known as rajas, tamas and sattva. These have distinctive characteristics. So you see, there is zero. But through ignorance, through darkness, you see it as snake. As soon as the light comes, snake vanishes, the rope remains. This universe, you see it in your own way. You are experiencing this universe. But what is it really you are experiencing? Brahman. You see, in all your life, Swami Vivekananda said, in all your life, you have seen nothing but God. But we are seeing the universe. And so when this ignorance vanishes, what remains? Knowledge of Brahman. Brahman alone is. Now again he says, rajas has the power of projection. Its nature is activity. Through its power, the phenomenal world which is involved in Maya begins to evolve. Attachment, desire and similar qualities are caused by its power, as also grief and similar moods of the mind. Lust, anger, greed, arrogance, jealousy, egoism, envy and other such vices are the worst characteristics of rajas. When a man is overpowered by it, he attaches himself to worldly actions. Hence, rajas is the cause of bondage. Tamas has the power of veiling the real nature of an object, making it appear other than it is. The real ignorance in us that causes us to see this universe is tamas, that covers our vision. is the cause of man's continued subjection to the wheel of birth and death. It also makes possible the operation of the power of rajas. A man may be intelligent, clever, and learned. He may have the faculty of keen self-analysis, but if he is overpowered by tamas, he cannot understand the true nature of the Atman, even though it may be clearly explained to him in various ways. He takes the appearance, which is the product of his ignorance, for the reality, and so he becomes attached to the delusions. This obscuring power of dreadful tamas is, alas, very great. Failure to perceive the actual object, seeing something as different from what it really is, vacillation of the mind, taking delusions for realities, these are the characteristics of tamas. As long as a man is attached to tamas, he can never get free from them. And rajas also will trouble him without causing. Tamas has these further characteristics: ignorance, laziness, dullness, sleep, delusion, and stupidity. A man who is under their influence cannot understand anything. He lives like a somnambulist or an unconscious log of wood. Now comes sattva. Sattva is purity. Even when it is mixed with rajas and tamas, as water is mixed with water, it lights the way to liberation. Sattva reveals the Atman as the sun reveals the objective world. You see, all these three gunas make up our mind and body and senses and everything of this universe. You see, this pillar is made up of three gunas. This body is made up of three gunas. The mind is made up of three gunas. Now, of course, this is full of tamas. And so, this can never, though sattva is there, rajas is there, but this can never know, can have any knowledge, any time. Now again, in an individual man is covered by tamas. Tamas is the greatest ignorance that covers the knowledge of Brahman. That also causes rajas to act, to be active. But there is in each one of us the power of sattva also. And this sattva has to be evolved. So he says, sattva is purity. Even it is when it is mixed with rajas and tamas, as water is mixed with water, it lights the way to liberation. Sattva reveals the Atman as the sun reveals the objective world. Sattva, now again, how can we grow sattva? If you meditate on that which is purity itself. You see, mind has this quality that it takes the form, quality, attribute of anything that the mind meditates upon. In Vedanta, mind is compared to water. As water takes the shape of square or circle according to the ground where the water exists. Similarly, the mind takes the form of the object of experience. You see, for instance, if I look at you, the mind has taken that form, and that's what I know. It's like water. And now again, if this mind is made to assume the form of the chosen ideal, of the spirit, of the Atman, then the mind is pure. Mind becomes pure. You see, oftentimes I have explained how, when Christ said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." What is that purity? When your mind is refusing to take any other form, but is established in the form of God. And how it is to be known? When you go to think and concentrate upon God, you see so many distractions arising. That means your mind is not pure yet. when your mind can become concentrated upon God without any distraction, then the mind has become pure. And that is sattva. Sattva is purity. Sattva, when mixed with the other gunas, has these characteristics. Even when mixed with rajas or tamas, it has something wonderful. Sattva, when mixed with the other gunas, has these characteristics. Absence of pride, purity, contentment, austerity, a desire to study the scriptures. You see, there is the rajas also is working. With self-surrender to God, harmlessness, truthfulness, continence, freedom from greed, faith, devotion, longing for liberation, aversion to the things of this world and the other virtues that lead toward God. Sattva, in its pure state, has the following characteristics. You see, those are the characteristics which are wonderful. When sattva is mixed with rajas, but here, when it is in a pure state, has the following characteristics. Tranquility, direct perception of the Atman, absolute peace, contentment, joy, and steady devotion to the Atman. Through these, the seeker tastes everlasting bliss. Now I think I stop here. May I invite questions?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording. If the mind is unconscious in deep sleep, who does the dreaming?
When you are deep sleep, nobody dreams. When you are dreaming, you are in a dreaming state.
Who does the dreaming?
The mind. The mind is active there. Mind is not unconscious in dream. Mind is unconscious only in deep sleep, dreamless sleep.
How do you get rid of the causal sheath?
Well, that's only... And now again, I think I explained to you, you know, many times this way. That as there is a causal sheath, the ego, for instance, similarly, universal aspect. There's the causal body of God, causal sheath. And that is the personal God. And through our causal sheath, when we go deep in meditation, then we attain this vision of the personal being, personal God. So causal leads us to that causal universe. To God, personal God. And that ceases, that ego also ceases when you go beyond and reach the impersonal Brahman, Nirvikalpa.
Then it is a matter of intensifying your meditation?
You see, this is what is said again. When you attain, Sri Ramakrishna points out how there are different centers of consciousness, you know. When you come to the sixth center, between the eyebrows, then you have the Savikalpa Samadhi. But when you have the Savikalpa Samadhi, Nirvikalpa is not very far off. Because it is just like a glass obstructing to become united with that great light. And then there comes a great desire to be united with that light. You break through that glass and you come to this center. But ordinarily, people attaining that does not live more than 21 days. And so again, because of Lord's play, Lord wills, and so a man even attaining Savikalpa, he lives in that. He doesn't go beyond until the moment of death. But one who has attained Savikalpa is not very far from Nirvikalpa.
Is the Savikalpa Samadhi beyond the mind?
Well, that's something very difficult to explain. Because if you say it is beyond the mind, who is there, then to come back and have the memory of that experience. Then again, it is said, Sri Ramakrishna has explained it this way. Shuddhaman, pure mind, is the same as pure Atman. In other words, the mind is there, it has become completely pure in this sense. You see, there is a crystal. The crystal is dirty. There is the red flower there. But because of the dirt, this crystal is not reflecting this red flower perfectly, though there is some reflection. Clean up this crystal. And then you see this red flower reflected. You see no difference between this crystal and the red flower. It has become one. So the pure mind, or pure buddhi, in the words of Sri Ramakrishna, is same as pure Atman. Become united. So, I'd say, the Atman, the mind is there. Otherwise, who would come back and give, have that memory?
Then what is the difference between consciousness and the mind? They're awfully close, aren't they?
Consciousness, close. Yeah, of course, is just different. What is the difference between an iron bar and fire? Two different things. But when the iron bar is nearer the fire, it has become hot like fire, same as fire, appears to be. But it is not the fire.
Will a devotee often receive the vision of a deity that he has not meditated upon? I have heard that in the transcendental state, he often has an experience that he would not expect.
Quite possible. Quite possible. And then suppose, you know, you have the vision of your own chosen ideal. It is not the same that you have been meditating upon. Because howsoever you try to imagine, you can't. You see, that is a very interesting thing. And this interesting, you will realize what a wonderful thing this is as you continue to practice. Why I say it's a very interesting thing? You see, you are trying to meditate on, say, Christ. You cannot visualize him. And even though you visualize him, immediately he goes away. And then suddenly, you feel a power from somewhere. Sometimes you feel it is from outside. And sometimes you may feel it from inside. You know, no telling how you would feel it. But you feel a power. And that is the grace descending, as it were, and lifts your mind and gives you the vision. And it may be what you have been meditating upon or something else. But you have the awareness, God, God, God. And so, you see, you may talk about grace and all that, but grace is something definitely experienced, and only experienced by those who devote themselves to God, who meditate upon God, who keep recollectedness upon God. It is they who feel that grace, who experience that grace in a very definite, direct, immediate way.
Would the non-dualist reject the vision?
No. Non-dualist. There's no such thing as non-dualist in the pure sense. Non-dualism is a matter of experience. And that is only experienced in Nirvikalpa. And when that is experienced, ordinarily people like us don't live to tell the tale. But only the divine incarnations and their associates, they attain to Nirvikalpa and they continue to live. Non-dualism, you know, as a philosophy is all right. But in practice, non-dualism cannot be practiced. Because who is there to practice what? So it's a matter of experience.
I think he meant that a person following the impersonal path would not be likely to have such visions.
Oh yes, sure as anything.
No. What I meant was that if a person had a vision, he might reject them.
Oh, how can you reject?
No.
He cannot reject it. The impetus is so great.
Well, then he might be converted to a dualist.
But we do not know of any individual. Take Shankaracharya. He was a non-dualist, beginning and end. But always, you know, you see how he goes to the temple and prays to Shiva, to Mother, and going into ecstasy. No, there is no such thing as pure non-dualism. Yes, perhaps Buddha was the only one in history, I'd say. But then again, Buddha pointed out how by meditating upon him, you achieve everything. So, dualism. There is dualism. And also he taught meditation. So there is dualism. You see, meditation is not possible unless there is dualism, unless there is one meditator and an object of meditation.
Sahanabhavato, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavirjam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu, mavidvishavahai. Om. May Brahman protect us. May he guide us. May he give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.